Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. And I do this show because there are so many toxic things out in the world, but it's not 100% toxic. There are so many things that we can do to remove toxic chemicals from our lives, from our workplaces, from our schools, from our bodies, from our homes. Just there's so many things, and that's why I do this every day, 5 days a week, at 12 noon Eastern, so that we can talk to people who have solutions about how you can have a toxic-free life. It's Monday, January 27th, 2014, and I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, where it's 70 degrees. It's been cold here, and it's going to be cold again, but it's 70 degrees right now. And today we're going to be thinking completely outside the box, or I should say talking outside the box of the industrial life that we live in that is determined by our industrial processes and industry. Industries, I guess, is a good word. Because we're going to be talking about permaculture, which is based in nature and how nature works. And so it's a whole different way about thinking about things. And there's nothing toxic about it. And by understanding these principles, we can apply them in our daily life to have a less toxic life and find out how to do things without using toxic chemicals. My guest today is Corinne Brennan. She's a sustainable living consultant, permaculture designer, and educator. And she actually lives right down the street from me, I think. I actually haven't been to her house, but I know she lives in Clearwater. Hi, Corinne.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. It's warm.
Good. Do you live nearby me? You used to live nearby me, but I don't know where you live now.
I think I don't live too far, actually.
Yeah, I think so, too. Anyway, happy Monday. Welcome to the show. So first, why don't you tell us, let's start out with your story about how you became interested in permaculture, how you found it, what made you interested in it, and why you made it, why you decided to make it your life's work.
Well, I've always been interested in the environment and nature and gardening, and also I've been interested in advocating for human rights and social justice issues, and I've worked in those areas, and I felt like I was hitting up against a wall in a number of those areas. It didn't seem like, I felt like we could only get so far, and there were problems that we couldn't really address. And when I first heard about permaculture, it seemed to address a lot of these problems really simply and really elegantly. And I got very excited about it because it seemed to open up a door to a lot of situations that could be improved.
Yes. I've had other permaculturists on, Paul Wheaton and Diane Dirks, but we've always talked about specific subjects. We haven't talked about permaculture in general. So tell us, I know one of the things that we should just say right off the top is that there's three basic concepts that permaculture runs on, and those are care for the earth, care for people, and share the surplus. But beyond that, there's a lot of different principles, and it was developed in Australia by a man named Bill Mollison. Why don't you tell us a little bit about his experience of, like, how did he come up with permaculture and what it's based on and what are just some basic ideas?
Well, Bill is a really brilliant individual, but he... I think he was looking for a solution to agriculture originally, and he was looking at, well, if we really want to make something sustainable, what should we look at? So he started thinking about indigenous people who have been growing food in the same area for hundreds or thousands of years, and he decided to look at what they're doing, you know? Mm-hmm. And some of what they're doing is quite amazing. It's a lost technology as far as we're concerned with our modern agriculture practices. He's also a scientist. He's got a science background, so he brought modern technology together with the ancient technology of people who have been living sustainably for many, many years and not with no toxins as well, and put this practice together that he calls permaculture.
I remember when I first heard about permaculture, I was, let's see, how many years ago was this now? 15 or 20? And I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I met some people I knew who were just learning about permaculture. And I was actually one of the co-founders of the first permaculture group in the San Francisco Bay Area. And we did, my whole group came to my yard, and we applied as best we could different permaculture principles. And so this is something that I know something about, and I don't know as much as you know, Corinne, because you've studied it much more than I do. But I think that we should say that what started from being an interest in agriculture has spread into other aspects of life. So tell us about the extended version of permaculture.
Yes, you did some great stuff. You told me earlier about some of the things you were doing. It's really interesting. I hope you'll talk a little bit about that. But
I will.
permanent agriculture became permaculture. And as the practice evolved and continued, some people started realizing that permanent agriculture actually, the same principles applied to all of life, to all of human existence and human structure. So permaculture now is short for permanent culture. And it applies to the built environment, to energy and technology, to education, to finance, and to community. And these principles are based on natural law or how nature works. There's a lot of observation that goes on in permaculture. It's a really core part of it. Like, let's observe what our gardens are doing and what the natural world is doing, and let's work with that energy instead of fighting it, which is how a lot of our modern structures are set up. We really fight the natural energies that are freely given to us instead of working with them. And that's one of the most exciting things about permaculture is to look into how those energies are operating and the beauty of it and the abundance that's created by the natural world, and to harness that or work with it and work within it instead of trying to pound it into the ground or destroy it.
Well, give us one example of that.
Well, in my garden, which is a very practical example, I live in Florida, and we have sand for soil, and we have a lot of fungus and other problems here that people consider problems because it's hard to grow tomatoes and lettuce here. They don't naturally grow here. So rather than grow tomatoes and lettuce in the summertime, which are likely to die in Florida, I look for plants that love to grow in the summertime in Florida, and I'll grow those. And instead of working hard to keep the plants alive, I just plant them and walk away and go out and harvest daily out of a truly abundant garden. And the plants are delicious. They're actually more nutritious than a lot of the plants we're used to. And they taste very similar. You can fix them to taste like plants that we're familiar with, or food that we're familiar with. So that's one example.
Yes. Some other examples would be things like using wind energy or solar energy, where it's just there. It's already there. Here in Florida, particularly, this is the environment Corinne and I are both familiar with, although we both lived other places. But we get breezes coming in off the Gulf all the time in the particular place where we live. And so that's free and abundant. It can be used to power things. And why should we be digging up coal and petroleum out of the ground when we could be powering things with something that's free and abundant? And so that's just one of the principles of permaculture that gets applied. And we'll talk about more after this. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Corinne Brennan. We're talking about permaculture. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Corinne Brennan. She's a sustainable living consultant, permaculture designer, and educator. Her website is growpermaculture.com, and right on her homepage, she's got this little video called Permaculture Principles at Work. She didn't make this, but it's on her website. And if you just click on that, it's 7 minutes, 43 seconds, and it tells you all the basics of permaculture and shows you some permaculture design things. One of the things that I want to say about permaculture is that it took me a long time to grasp like what would be a simple definition of permaculture, because it seems to encompass so many different things. And when I first started asking myself 30 years ago, well, if we were to live in harmony with nature, what would that look like? I found that it really, in order to answer that question, you have to step outside of industrialism, that it really is like there's this big world of nature, and then the whole industrial world is like a subset of that. And when you step out of this little subset and you go out into this big world of nature, you find that there are laws that apply to all living things, including us human beings. And it's not like we're separate from the rest of life. We are as much a part of life as a tree or a bird or any of those things. And I found that I really not only needed to think differently, but I needed to have a whole different set of skills. Like, for example, I prepare most of my food from fresh raw ingredients. I hardly buy anything that's processed. And right now, I'm making chicken stock that is so much better than canned chicken stock. I bought two organic chickens. I roasted them. I ate part of it for dinner. I have chicken already cooked for the rest of the week. And today I'm taking all those bones and I'm letting them simmer on the stove all day long. And not only does it give me chicken soup, but it gives me all these nutrients and minerals and all these health-giving properties that come from homemade chicken soup, not store-bought chicken soup. And I would say that's as much a part of permaculture as other parts of permaculture. And so there's a lot of, wouldn't you agree with that? Do you agree with that?
I'm sorry?
Do you agree with learning how to prepare food as part of permaculture?
Yes. You know, permaculture is a very pleasurable way to live, using permaculture in your life. I mean, I do the same thing. I have fresh food in my garden, and when I go out and harvest it, it takes me less time than it takes to go to the grocery store.
Yes, it does.
I go to watch the butterflies on the flowers and the birds singing, and it's very beautiful. And one thing I also like about permaculture is we incorporate a lot of aesthetics into our designs. It really is a design methodology, and that's something important to understand. I think that's one of the most exciting aspects to me that really changed my worldview. I became a designer, and before I never thought of myself as a designer, but I really was, and I think we all are designers. We're designing our lives. We're designing our relationships. We're designing, our future. And we don't always think about it. Well, permaculture gives you some tools to think about how you want to design your life. And it gives you some tools to open doors that you might not have thought were open to you. One thing that we do is we use resources that are around us to improve our lives. So when we design an improvement somewhere, we'll look at what is available that's right in my environment that I could use, and that
I just love
that
makes
it real.
I know. And, some of these are these concepts, they're so practical and they're so common sense and they're easy to remember. I mean, I learned that principle when I first learned about permaculture almost 20 years ago. And even now today, it's become part of me. It's not like I'm sitting here saying, well, I need to do something, so let me go dig up a permaculture principle. It's that when I say I need this material or I need to do this, first I look around just right where I am. I don't go look at the store. You know, I don't say, I have to go to the store and buy something. I say, well, let me just look around and see what I can use that I already have in my environment. And my environment includes, I have a very small lot where my house is, but I have a little backyard and a little front yard. So it includes some natural resources, but everything else, everything in your home is part of your environment. And so just as you might go look for some material out in nature, you might already have what it is you need right in your home, something that can be reused in a different way or made into something else. It's just that principle of looking around you and seeing how close to where you are can you get what it is that you need.
Yeah, and it's very creative process, and it helps you really look at the world in a different way. And that way is a way of abundance. So
it is.
It's the best of all worlds in a lot of ways, because you're taking care of yourself, you're healing the environment. You're able to improve your community. It's definitely a win-win type of practice.
Well, we're going to go to break in just a few seconds, but when we come back, I want us to talk about abundance, because I really find that nature and permaculture, because it's working with nature as nature, is all about abundance. It's all about doing things so that there continues to be regeneration, as opposed to our industrial culture, which is based on oil and fossil fuels and on things that are in limited supply. Permaculture is based on unlimited supply. So we'll talk when we come back a little bit about how permaculture does that, because I think it's a different way of thinking about it. Actually, we do have a few more seconds than I thought we had. So let's start talking about it, and then we'll go to break. I'll interrupt you.
Yeah. When we design a system, we look for how we can heal it and how we can make it even more abundant. And also we think in terms of seven generations ahead. So how can we have a garden that's going to feed us abundantly, but also will feed our children, our grandchildren, and their grandchildren, you know? And that's, when you set up a system like that, it becomes much easier to care for because it regenerates itself.
And we'll learn more about it after the break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Corinne Brennan. Her website is growpermaculture.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Corinne Brennan, and we're talking about permaculture. Her website is growpermaculture.com, and there's a lot of information on permaculture there. I mentioned earlier that she has a little introductory video there that's only 7 minutes, and it'll tell you all about the details if you want to learn more. Corinne, so before the break, we were talking about abundance. I want you to tell us about food forests, because I think that is a great example of what we're talking about.
Yes. In an urban area, we might call them edible forest gardens. And again, we're working with nature instead of against her, and we're looking at how does nature keep a forest going? I mean, a forest is one of the most abundant systems and most efficient systems on the planet. It's far more efficient than anything that humans have developed at this point. So we look at how can we bring some of those elements into our yard, into our gardens, and create a much more abundant situation than we might if we just had rows of lettuce planted in our backyard. So we'll bring in layers of food instead of just a straight line row. We'll bring in support plants that support other plants. Like there's a plant called a nitrogen fixer, which will actually bring nitrogen from the air, which is like the protein for plants, this real necessary nutrient, and fix it in the soils to make it available for other plants. It's really amazing how nature cooperates so much and has plants helping each other and different things in the system helping each other. So,
in permaculture, what you're really doing is you're building a system. You're not just building a bed.
That's right.
And one of the things that I think is so beautiful about the concept of food forests is that, well, if you just go to a regular forest, that forest is growing food for everything that's there. And that if we were, I like the animals and the plants, the various plants, and you've got the earthworms and everything. It's like at all levels, there's a lot of food going on in a forest. And then if you as a human being were to go into that forest and you didn't have the industrial structure, you could find all kinds of food in a forest. And you could just live off of that forest. And so if instead of thinking about your backyard as, say, raised beds and rows and all of those things, that if you thought of it as a forest, and I actually live in a forest. My house is under some oak trees. And all levels from, you know, the ground to growing things on the ground to having trees that are giving fruits or nuts is this. Everywhere it can be food, and even using things like I remember seeing a video about food forests, and they were growing specific plants so that they could then cut the branches and use the leaves in order to build the soil, and that every part of it was about growing something either to eat or to nourish the plants or to nourish the system. And when I drive down the street and I see all these bags of trimmings that people have put in plastic bags to take them off to the dump someplace so that the garbage people come and pick them up, I just, because all of that greenery should be going back into your backyard to nourish your soil.
Yes. Yes, it really is a circular system, and animals play an important role in it as well.
Yes.
So, you know, the animal waste feeds the plants. The plants feed the animals. It's really a wonderful mutual support system, and we try to create that in our own way. We bring in birds and beneficial creatures into the system to help us maintain it. So I make lizard houses or lizard. I make sure there's habitat for lizards in my yard because they eat the bugs that eat my plants. We have lizards all through our garden doing my work for me.
Yes, and yeah. See, and isn't there a food forest that has been producing food for like 2,000 years or something?
Yes, there's one in Morocco that's 2,000 years old. There's a pretty famous one in Vietnam that's 300 years old, and the village depends on this forest for its food, and they know every tree in the jungle. I mean, they plant them. They choose where the next tree is going to grow once an older tree is starting to die. So it is managed. This is the difference between a regular forest and a food forest or an edible forest garden is we do manage it. In the city, I a landscaper, so I tend to make it very aesthetic, and I'll think about those kind of things as well when I'm designing a food forest.
And so it could just be like, one of the things that I like to do is go to botanical gardens, and they probably use lots of pesticides, and it's a way too manicured and things, but I like going and being in a beautiful garden setting, you know, and I have space in my backyard, and I haven't had time to do it all yet to make it be the way I want it to be. But I could just see walking through my garden, and every place I look, I'm growing something that's edible or flowers to come in to bring into the house. And it is, I mean, I've done that kind of gardening before in California, and that I had, for example, in my garden in California, I had a garden that was down on one level. I had a split level house, so the garden was down, and then my deck was up about 15 feet. And every year we would plant heirloom tomatoes, and we would put fish heads and... What else did we put? I don't remember everything. I remember the fish heads, though. But we put we would just dig a hole and put the nutrients in it. And then we plant these little seeds, like, you know, you would get in a six-pack or something. I mean, these little plants. And by the end of the summer, these tomato plants were climbing up on our deck that's 15 feet high, and they would be just like climbing and curling around on the deck and coming in the house. And they were just amazing. And we had all the tomatoes we could possibly eat. We only planted 6 plants. And we also had, where I lived out in a rural village at the time. And there was one family that had these wonderful raspberry canes. And everybody ended up getting raspberry canes from this one family. And so you would go around from house to house, and you would see everybody had raspberry canes. And they were fabulous, and they just bore fruit all summer long. But we all knew exactly where they came from, because they came from this one family who was giving everybody raspberry canes. And that's abundance. That's abundance. And, yeah. And, you know, if we just had, if everybody's backyard was like that, we would have no food shortage at all.
Yes, and it's beautiful. And, you know, one thing about oak trees, there's a lot of oak trees in Clearwater, and there's a lot of people have a lot of trees in their yard, and they think they can't grow anything because it's too shady. Well, there's some wonderful plants that grow in the shade. And, again, that's working with nature. And one of those is turmeric, for instance, which is such a healthy antioxidant healing plant.
We need to go to break. We need to go to break, but we'll hear more about this when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindia, and my guest today is Corinne Brennan, and we're talking about permaculture. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Corinne Brennan. We're talking about permaculture, and her website is growpermaculture.com. My website is toxicfreetalkradio.com, and you can go there and see what other guests are going to be on this week. And you can also listen to the archives 24/7. We've got all the shows and lots of interesting people saying lots of interesting things. It's toxicfreetalkradio.com. So I know one thing I wanted to talk about, Corinne. I wanted to talk about, in particular, one permaculture principle that I have found very, very useful, and that's the idea of zones. Do you want to tell us about that?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the word.
Zones. Zones. Z-O-N-E-S. Zones.
I'm sorry, I'm really having a hard time hearing that word for some reason.
Okay, so I'll explain it then. So in permaculture, there is a principle called zones. And what it is about looking at how using space appropriately, depending on the distance it is from you or from the distance it is from whatever the central item is. And so, for example, if you're doing a garden and you had a house in the middle or wherever it is located on your property, then you would draw circles around, if you were drawing a picture, you would make circles at various intervals out away from the house. And you would put, for example, the herb garden next to the kitchen door, because you could just then step outside and get your herbs and put them in the whatever it is you're cooking. And then if further away, you would have gardens that you didn't go to or need to go to as frequently, but would still be close by because of harvesting. And then you might have like the back 40, where you're doing something that you don't need to reach very often. And I found that to be really important as I started gardening, because I found that I didn't want to walk all the way to the other side of the house in order to do something, that I wanted to have things. And even in my house here in Florida, my entire edible garden part, where I'm growing food for, you know, lettuce and things like that, it's all on the side of my house that goes right outside the kitchen door, so that I don't have to walk clear over to the other side. And I actually have this wonderful south wall where I could be espaliering trees, fruit trees or something, on this wall. And yet I don't do it, because it's so far away from me to walk that I would need to, in order to apply this, I would need to put a door on that side of the house, and then that area would be accessible. Not that I couldn't walk all the way over there, but zones say keep everything as close to you as possible. And so I apply that inside my house too. In the kitchen, I have, like, my knife is always right next to my cutting board. I don't even put it in the drawer. I just leave it sitting on the cutting board. So whenever I want to chop something, my knife is right there. And in my office, I actually intentionally said, I'm going to use zones. And I put on my desk only the things that I'm using immediately, like pens and pencils and scissors. And I have a drawer next to my desk where I put things like my stapler and things, because I'm not using a stapler as often as I use a pen, for example. But it's right there when I need it. And then storing the copy paper is way off on the other side of the house, because it's something that I don't need to be using on an immediate basis. And I just think that that's just an example of one of the principles that's so elegant and so applicable everywhere. And it just is that you just decide where's the central point. And like, I'm sitting at my desk and it's like, what do I need to have within arm's reach? And what do I not need to have that I could get up and get it whenever I need it, like once a month or whatever? That once a month thing doesn't belong on your desk. It belongs in a closet somewhere. And when you start thinking about it in that way, it's a wonderful way to organize all the stuff in your house.
Yes, yes. It's so much of permaculture is so practical, and it's common sense. And once you hear it, of course, I knew that. But
yeah,
you weren't
doing it before. It's so obvious. Everything about permaculture is like this.
One of the things I love about zones is the zone five, which is the natural world. And that's a real special zone for permaculturists, because that zone we leave alone. And in a small yard, it's not really practical to have a wild area in your yard. But I usually try. I'll have a little corner or along the fence or something where I just let it go and let it do whatever it wants. And that's my classroom. That's where I go to watch what nature is doing in my yard, in my ecosystem. And I learn from nature. I learn what she likes, what she doesn't like, and what does well in that area. And sometimes I'll plant seeds in an area and just let them go, especially when I'm in a new area. And this is fun. And people sometimes they feel like they have to follow the rule book and, garden just like it says and be successful the first year. And I don't approach it that way. I will always have an experimental area where I'm throwing seeds in, and I learn from how they do, which ones do great, which ones struggle, and I'm, again, working with nature and looking for what it likes it in my ecosystem.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think that having that zone five of just the natural world out there as a general life principle, I think is very important, because then it puts you in a context and that you're able as a human being to say, I do live in this ecosystem, and that this part I get to be part of, and that part I need to make sure continues to be there just in its wild state. And if that were part of planning, community planning is, where are we going to leave nature alone instead of how are we going to use all the possible space? Our world would look entirely different, And
yes.
it's just having that consideration, having that awareness that nature even exists at all is, I think, and that it has value, is something that I'm seeing is there's more awareness of that, but there needs to be more, our world still runs on industrial assumptions, and those industrial assumptions are not the same assumptions as nature. And permaculture gives us a tool where we can design according to principles how we live our lives and how we organize things and what we can do to create abundance. And I just think that's an incredible, wonderful thing.
Yes, yes. I love it when I get city planners and designers and urban planners into my classes, because they have that planning background and a design background, and they, when they get these principles, it's just their worldview, sometimes remarkably, and it's exciting, because they want solutions. They're struggling. They're hitting up against walls at this point of running out of resources and money and et cetera. So permaculture is a solution for everybody. It can be used on scale in large projects or small projects. I'm looking out my window right now at my weeds growing in my backyard. And this is something I just wanted to mention, is I leave my Spanish needle growing next to my house, and they're full of bees right now and butterflies. They're beautiful white daisy-like flowers, and they're a very ubiquitous weed in our area.
I have those in my yard, too.
It's also completely edible, and it's a medicinal plant. It's more nutritious than lettuce, and it's really good. I cook it like a green. I put it in my salads. It has a little bit of bitterness as it gets old, you know, bigger. But when you eat the young plants, they're delicious, and they respond well. You can mow them, and they'll come right back up. So, and the bees just cover them. They're just in heaven. So I don't always weed. I leave the lamb's quarter in the garden and the amaranth. These plants have more nutrition than the stuff that you struggle to grow, like, and they have to take care of so hard. And they grow, they love it. You don't have to do anything to get them to grow abundantly.
That's so wonderful. It just seems harmonious to me, you know, that life should just flow like that. And it's just that we don't, in this culture, we don't have the information and the background and the tradition to do that, because everybody that has been born, who is alive today, hasn't grown up with that. That we're all taught to live in an industrial world. And in order to not do that, we need to break out of it and have more information to think of things in a different way. And I know I came from that. So if I can change how I think everybody can change how they think. And especially since it's such a beautiful and harmonious way of thinking. And once you start applying it and seeing those results, it just is a wonderful thing.
Yes, that's a really nice way of saying it. Very nicely. It really is. Most people are attracted once they realize what they're missing and what they forgot about. You know, you want to be a part of nature. You feel good when you're in the woods. There's energy there that you can interact with. And there's nothing more pleasurable than picking something fresh out of your yard and eating it. It's got all the life force and all the enzymes and all the really super healthy things in it to help you detox and heal yourself.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Corinne. We're coming up to the end of our time. Again, her website is growpermaculture.com, and I think we've all learned a lot. Thanks for being with us. And
Thank you, Deborah.
You're welcome. You're welcome. That's it for our time. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and you can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com to find out more.